The show starts in 1 minute.
Please remember to replace the speaker on the post when you leave the theater.
And now, on with the show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 83 of Saturday Matinee Theater, brought to you by your friends at the Long Box Crusade. We're here in Casa de Vega, in our recording studio set up in one of the many unused rooms of the Vega home. I am not your normal host, Jared Ulrich, the Yard Tale artist. He is out for today. I am Delvin the Darkwell Williams, and Jared had me written in the script cleverly as the evil land baron himself, J.A. Marsden. So it kind of makes sense. I have taken over Casa de Vega. If you would see me, like, there's a subcaption under, it says laughs in Spanish. And trust me, you don't want to know like what that laugh is. It is sinister, I'm telling you. Anyway, joining me is the Phillips to my to the James. That's Pat Sampson, a.k.a. DJ Christatos. How are you feeling today, loyal friend Christatos?
Hey, Delvin, I am glad to be here. I just got the golf clubs moved over, picked up all those balls that I dropped. So I think I'm doing all right. I came here first, but I wanted to get things scoped out since this is our first time in, Casa de Vega here, where we're kind of hanging out. And, you know, me and my entrepreneur, Dave, are selling stuff. You know, we first started selling stuff, our pipes at 221B.
Yeah.
Then we were up in space on Mongo, you know, with the short shorts emporium that we had.
Yes.
Yeah. And then, we were in the Bat Gotham City and we were selling fake IDs.
Mm-hmm.
We had a fake ID going on. And now we just recently in Gotham, we were just recently being able to take over like an old funhouse, kind of a ride that we found got abandoned. So we're able to take that over now.
Okay.
Make it because we're growing.
Yeah, but, I hear. You know, yeah. What are you doing here in Casa de Vega?
Well, in Casa de Vega, what we're actually going to do, me and, old Ben, we wanted to kind of get some stuff ready. We're going to make a taco stand.
Oh.
Yeah. It's going to be a nice taco stand. And it's going to be crunchy tacos. And what it's going to be called is, you come down on them in the crunch. You just come down on that crunch.
Okay.
Yeah.
We come down on that crunch. That's a good logo. Yeah, I like it.
Mm-hmm. I suggest, I'm not in your criminal enterprise, your business. In your business, but it's Mexico. Mexico's pretty hot a lot of places. Mm-hmm. Short shorts might be the way to go.
Ooh, well, yeah, we do have some extra. So, yeah, that's a good idea, Delvin. Well, if it goes off pretty well, then we'll cut you in a little bit.
Okay. All right. We'll talk later.
Okay.
We'll talk later, but we will move on to the most enthusiastic butler that we could possibly have. I mean, like, enthusiasm off the charts. Ronaldo, of course, but, you know, played by Jason the Weasel Skull Ulbrich. How are we today, Jason?
Oh, we are just great. Everything's coming together. Delvin, I'm going to need about $1,500 of Patreon funds. I got inspired.
Okay.
So I commissioned an artist to make a life-size painting of me standing in that Superman pose.
Okay.
And I'm going to have that be my door to my podcast room from here on out. So I'm already kind of butt deep in this project. So if you could expedite that $1,500, I would appreciate it.
Okay, I will consider doing that, but I'm going to at least have to see, like, you know, you posing like that. Can you do it seated here for, like, the live audience? Oh my.
Now, would you be interested in maybe posing like that with some tacos in your hand?
How much is in it for me? Because I am in deep.
Okay, we'll talk off.
These artists don't come cheap, man.
He already said he was in it, to a part of him that he's rather attached to. So, I mean, like, he might have to grab a hold of a few tacos real quick. But nevertheless, I will let you guys, talk in quiet. We also have to introduce, after you've been on the show, about 17 times, you're not really a host. You're more like that plucky recurring guest that everyone, you come into the door and everyone's like, woo! Yeah. Ow. That's who he is at this point. The regular recurring guest. His name is Alan J. Porter. Welcome back to the show, Alan.
Thank you, Delvin. Thank you. So after you guys had me on the last Batman show, I thought, as you know, Batman was clear and done, I'd go and poke around in the Batcave under Wayne Manor there. And some dudes put a horse in it. Yeah, I don't understand what's going on there. I mean, there's a horse and gourds with the Z on them. And there's some weird going down in those caves, I'll tell you.
I tell you what, like the sense of timing, by the way, of like Zorro and that horse, impeccable. Like if that horse moved like 2 feet forward or to the right, like he is in for a bumpy ride. So, we'll figure out what that horse is all about. It may have had something to do with Batman, too, as we well know. Welcome to the show, Alan. I don't have to introduce myself because I already did that. Oh, we're supposed to ask everyone. This is everyone's first foray into Zorro. So everyone is brand new. And with that, I have to ask the question, what is your first memory of Zorro? Or what is your favorite iteration of Zorro on screen? You can answer either of those questions, or you can answer just one of those questions. If one of those is, it's a little bit too difficult. So Jason's kind of nodding. I'm going to go with Jason. Jason, what's your favorite iteration, or what's your first memory of Zorro, and what's your favorite iteration?
First memory of Zorro, very similar to my first memory of Sherlock Holmes, are those Big Little books. I had a Zorro Big Little book growing up, and that's what got me introduced into the world of Zorro. My favorite movie, I got to say, I really like the first Antonio Banderas Zorro movie that Martin Campbell directed back in, oh gosh, it was like the late 90s or early 2000s. I thought that was so cool. It came at a time when, you know, there was a lot of computer-generated effects were just all over the place. And just to see the practical effects and the stunts in that movie, that still holds up to me today. I really like that Antonio Banderas led Zorro movie with Catherine Zeta-Jones.
So Antonio Banderas did both Zorro and Desperado? I mean, that's basically the same movie, right?
Kind of, yeah, a little bit.
Essentially. Yeah. Okay, I was just curious. Like, I'm sure, like, as an actor, like, sometimes you have to go to different places, you know, to play certain roles on the silver screen. Like, he had to just go to the exact same place, like, to do both movies.
Probably did that for Puss in Boots, too.
Wait a minute. I know my motivation. All right, Pat, same questions. What was what's your favorite iteration? What was your first memory of Zorro?
Boy, it's probably some books, some older of the, the TV series. There was a TV series with this later on. I thought, maybe I'm not thinking that right, but... You know, it's him like the Long Ranger at the time where, you know, that zeitgeisty kind of stuff when I was growing up as a kid that I would get into and see. Like Jason, the Legend of Zorro from the 2005 movie was something that stood out to me. I thought it was well done and then just brought Zorro to the forefront again during that time frame. I thought it was really done well. So, yeah, I like the sword buckliness that he does with the sword a lot. But, you know, he's got gun, he's got a whip, he's got the sword. So, yeah, he's been around. And it's always been something that has kind of piqued an interest for me.
And I'll jump in now to say I do not remember. Like, Zorro is kind of like Robin Hood to me. Like, he's so steeped in lore that at some point, like I've seen him across TV and I may have read something about him in books, but I can't remember like my first like actual memory of Zorro. And same thing with the movie. Like I know at some point I've probably seen something done with him on TV. I probably watched some of the Zorro movie, but like memory's fuzzy here. I just have no direct access to those memories at the present. Alan might though. So we got to ask him.
Well, you know me, it's going to be a long and complicated story. In fact, it was so long and complicated, I actually wrote a mini essay about it in my newsletter this week. So if you
Settle in, lad.
No, I'm not going to do it all here. But if you want to go to alanjporter.substack.com, you can read my long essay on me and my history with Zorro. But I actually started thinking about it, and I thought it was probably originally thought it was the 1981 Filmation cartoon. But I remembered that as being earlier. I thought that was like something I'd watched in the 70s and that. But thinking back, I actually think it was my grandmother that introduced me to Zorro. I used to go around to her place every Sunday afternoon and we'd watch what she called adventure movies together. And she was the person that introduced me to Tarzan and Alan Quatermain and all those things. So I think she's probably the one that introduced me to Zorro, probably with one of the old black and white, you know, movies or the old Disney TV show. But it was around the 81 cartoon I really got interested in Zorro and the history of Zorro. And I'm with Jason on the best version of Zorro is the 1998 Mark of Zorro with Antonio Banderas. And for me, that's the one I put on. If I want to watch a Zorro movie or I just want to watch a good swashbuckling movie, that's the one I put on. And of course, the fact it's got Wales' best exporting Catherine Zeta-Jones in it doesn't do it any harm either.
You could just have Catherine Zeta-Jones read the phone book and I'd probably watch it for a good 20-30 minutes.
You could have her dressed up as Zorro.
But I actually am going to plug a book here, and it's not my book, but if you are, if folks listening watching this do are interested in Zorro, I highly recommend this, Zorro Unmasked. It's the official history of Zorro by Sandra Curtis, and it came out just around the same time as that movie in 1998. It goes right up to the beginnings, the making of the first Antonio Banderas movie. So if you can find a copy, I found this one secondhand, but it's a really good book about the history of Zorro. Actually, has several pages about this particular serial in here as well.
Alan, unrelated question. You wouldn't happen to have a pseudonym, would you?
What, you mean it's Sandra Curtis? Yeah. Shucks, you found me out.
Aha, there you go. I the investigative questions, I dig here and sometimes I find some things out. You know what? Like, you might not know what this show is about, though. So Pat, the generous man that he is, he's going to tell you.
Well, Delvin, I am glad you asked. Saturday Matinee Theater is a retro review show brought to you by the Lombox Crusade, where we'll be taking you back to the past with some potentially overlooked retro awesomeness in the realm of television, movie serials, or films. Basically, if it's vintage and it's kind of forgotten, we're going to dig it up. On this episode, we'll begin our dive into 1937's Zorro serial, Zorro Rides Again. The 1937 Zorro serial was produced by Sol C. Siegel. It starred John Carroll as Zorro, Helen Christian as Joyce, Reed Howells as Philip, Duncan Ronaldo as Ronaldo, Noah Beery as J.A. Marsden, and Richard Alexander as El Lobo. So grab your six shooters, foil your whip, and ride into adventure. But don't forget, watch out for those bombs.
Before we hand it over to Jason for this episode's info, let's take a look, or in this case, a listen, to a commercial that would have been playing at the time this episode was released back in 1937. This will help us get in the right time frame of mind, if you will, and transport us back to the 30s. For this episode's commercial retro rewind, we have His Master's Voice Radio.
Comes the news that every radio listener has been hoping to hear. Now you can hear every program in your own home with such fidelity, clarity, and perfection of tone as you would expect only in the studio itself. His Master's Voice achieves it for you with their new 1937 true-to-life radio receivers. Booming echoes, discordant reverberations are totally eliminated. Ask the local distributor. His shop is distinguished by the world-famous His Master's Voice trademark, which appears on his window. He'll explain the many exclusive features of their new receivers. The large edge-lit dial, which makes tuning in a pleasure, will delight you with its legibility. It's easy to read, easy to follow. The cabinets are superb, beautifully designed and constructed, prices are low, and values greater than ever. Prepare yourself for a new radio thrill. See and hear the new 1937 His Master's Voice, true-to-life radio receivers without delay. Your local dealer will gladly arrange a home demonstration to suit your convenience and will further explain his easy term purchase plan. His Master's Voice, built and guaranteed by the Australian branch of the greatest radio manufacturing organization in the British Empire.
So that was the commercial, Alan. I know you can say something about this. What do you think about this commercial?
That commercial stirred the blood. I'm going to go out and get my Union Jack and hang it outside the house. This is the last bastion of the British Empire with our His Majesty's Voice radio set booming out, Land of Hope and Glory, rid of all distortion, just as the way it should have been.
No Yankees involved in creation at all. Yeah.
Yep. I must admit, considering that was actually an advert for Australia, I love the fact that it's still a BBC received pronunciation British guy doing the commercial for an Australian product. They obviously don't trust those colonials to actually deliver their own radio commercials.
It's so interesting. All I hear, you know, that side of nationalism. I'm so used, of course, to being in the States, hearing American nationalism, but to hear British nationalism makes me smile because obviously every country has their source of pride. So thank you for that, Alan. We will pass it to Pat. Pat, what did you think about the radio commercial there? The radio commercial about radios.
The radio commercial about radios, yes. I thought it was really cool to hear something about a radio. And I wasn't sure where this radio was from until they mentioned, you know, towards the end that it was from British Columbia there. And I was like, really cool. I was like, was that around? Is that what they called it? The Her Majesty's
Was it British Columbia?
No,
Australia.
Australia.
Which is
just like
British
the other side of the other side of the world, Pat. I think we need to
Sorry. Yeah, you know me. I don't know anything.
Yeah, His Majesty's Voice is HMV, which is still around. It's a big electronics. Well, not electronics so much these days. It's more from records and music store and record labels and a big chain of music stores. Originally, like all your record players and your radios, where HMV was a big electronics brand. Though I do notice the one actually in the photo with the YouTube is actually a Philips radio. Not an HMV one. Yeah, which was a Dutch company, but whatever.
That actually had me confused because I saw the Philips and was like, is this a Philips radio commercial? Like, I didn't.
Yeah. I think that was just the YouTube. Whoever did the image capture for the YouTube thing just threw a radio set on there.
I got you. Just wanted a picture. So I'm clear. HMV is that an Australian company?
No, it's a British company.
That's a British company. Which part is Australian?
The ads for played in Australia because it's talking about.
Oh, see, that's where I was getting confused, though. But the company
was talking about it. He was talking about the radio being produced under license in Australia by a branch of the best radio manufacturer in the British Empire.
Got it.
I was kind of right then. No, that it was manufactured at least.
No, right? You said British Columbia, bro. That's in Canada.
All right,
Australia. What does it matter?
Yeah, you were in no way.
Never mind that. I'm just sinking in my hole. Now, let me dig this hole a little bit deeper.
We keep going. Okay. You'll get to Australia.
We got long arms, Pat. We'll pull you out. Did you have anything else to add, man?
I just thought it was really cool that you could actually, they'll come to your house with this radio and set it up and, you know, kind of, it takes you back to that day when you would have somebody actually come and do that in your home. And, you know, like the guy with the shopping vac would come and show you a new cool shopping vac and they demonstrate it all in your home. And just to think, you know, at the time, this was your, you know, like your television nowadays, it was your entertainment for the whole household. So you wanted it to be nice because everybody was going to be around that.
Yeah. Back in the 30s, people would gather around the radio and listen to the radio serials. Like that was a family activity, which if you think about it, that's kind of cool where you just kind of sit around and just listen to it and then maybe head off to sleep for the night. That's kind of cool and quaint. Speaking of cool and quaint, we take it to Jason.
Yeah, I'll just pick up where Pat left off. I mean, this was the entertainment center. You know, nowadays we sit in front of the television, or I guess now in front of our phones, and we watch streaming media. So when he says, like, and affordable, I'm wondering, like, what is affordable? Like, how much does this cost? Because they mention a payment plan. Whenever you mention a payment plan, I'm like, okay. So this isn't like I'm just going to throw down some money and get this nice radio. I got to thinking about, you remember like when we were young and, you know, we had our 42-inch televisions that weighed about as much as a minibus. There were the two TVs, yeah. You could be buried in it when you died, use it as a coffin afterward. Yeah. And then they had that plasma. Remember when that first plasma screen TV, that flat screen came out? You're like, oh man, you know, and people were jumping on it, and it's like, and it's only $53,000. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder if this is like that, you know, if this was like actually affordable, or it's like the, you know, the super tech people were buying into this, and then, you know, if they were invited over to their friend's house and they had some old crappy radio, and it's like, listen to that all reverberating and shit. You know, we need to go back to my house so we can listen to some quality radio program.
Got the HMV over here. You hear that sound? You hear that sound? No crackles. There are no crackles at all.
Yeah. It's like when we went to the Yeti instead of our Coke mics. You know, it's just like upgrading.
I just did a quick Google search. In America, a mid-range family radio set was $123 in 1937.
Okay.
Wow. $120-something. I translated to today's dollars. That is $48,000.
That's a car. Yep. Yeah.
That may or may not be true. Somebody might want to. Somebody might want to do the math for me on that one. So it was interesting. Interesting commercial, and I definitely like that. You know, like if you think about it, that's kind of how technology goes, though. Where I am constantly reminded. Jared and I had a communications class. And the guy who taught it was a dude named Dr. Carr. And Dr. Carr, like he, you know, had that Southern accent. He wouldn't say wireless. He'd say wireless. But that man had some really good advice for 1997, 98 or so. And one of those pieces of advice was you always skip a technology or iteration of a technology. Like, you know, if iPhone 15 comes out and then like, 3 weeks later, they're coming out with iPhone 15.2, and this is the new sleek thing. No, skip a generation, go to the next one. And because it's too expensive to stay on the cutting edge of technology. That said, I would imagine, I bet that somebody has one of those HMV radios from back in 1937, and that son of a gun still plays today. I would put money on it, because it's not like a radio has a whole bunch of like complex parts, is really just a transistor or two. I guarantee
you. No transistors, not in 1937.
No?
No, it'd be tubes.
Tubes, yeah.
Yeah, it's all tubes.
Yeah.
See, educate me. There, you, like, I guarantee you someone still has one of those things.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, today. Tubes are come back in with a lot of audiophile folks. They give you a much better sound than transistors. So.
See, and if for no other reason, those things might be so heavy that nobody wants to move them. Well, yeah. Now that we are in our 1930s mindset, here's Jason with the episode info.
All right. Thank you, Dovin. Chapter one was titled Death from the Sky. It was released, or at least it's estimated it was released, because the records of this have been a little bit lost in time, but around October 16th, 1937. It was directed by William Whitney and John English. The writers were Frank Adrian, Morgan Cox, Barry Shipman, John Randall, and Ronald Davidson. It guest starred Nigel DeBruler as Don Manuel Vega. As a reminder, all 12 episodes are available on YouTube, and we highly encourage you to watch the episode before proceeding with this podcast because, well, number one, it's just more fun that way, and Delvin's going to give you a synopsis about this episode, and we're going to discuss it. So are there probably some spoilers that are heading your way? So again, if you haven't watched this episode, we recommend that you pause here, go check it out on YouTube, and then come back to join our discussion. This is about 17 minutes per episode, and most of them are, but this first one is a little bit longer. It's still not a big demand. It's about a half hour, this first episode. So that's about the time commitment you're looking at. If you want to watch before continuing with this podcast. For those of you who are watching along with us, we'd love to hear your insights. And don't forget to comment about the show on Twitter/X using the hashtag I'm following Zorro. Pat.
Hashtag I'm following Zorro.
Alan.
I'm following Zorro.
Fearless leader.
Hashtag I'm following Zorro. Jason.
Hashtag I'm following Zorro. And with that, let's go ahead and turn it back over to Delvin so he can give you this episode summary.
Minute intro episode, this one is surprisingly easy to recap. J.A. Marsden is an evil land baron who uses the rough skills of Brad, El Lobo, Dache to strong-arm folks out of their land. Marsden's sights are currently set on the New California-Yucatan Railroad, owned by Don Manuel Vega and Joyce and Philip Andrews. When El Lobo and his gang begin terrorizing the railroad sites, Don Vega prays that the spirit of his multi-generational family hero, Zorro, will save them. His prayers are answered when his nephew James arrives. James may seem like an aloof playboy, but as the great-grandson of the original Zorro, he has taken on the mantle of the Dark Fox and begins pushing back against Marsden's strong-arm tactics. He wins a few fistfights. Jared puts in quotes to let the crew express their shock and pleasure at anyone winning fistfight. So go ahead, like here, come off mute and give me some sound of surprise. Go ahead. Alan, you're welcome to do so as well. Thank you. Thank you very much. And acquits himself in a railway shootout. But again, the crew can express their shock or pleasure here if they choose to. Go ahead.
Victory! Victory!
It's so weird that the hero wins. I know. As Zorro defends a moving train, Marsden brings in air support and his men begin to drop bombs from a plane on the train. Will Zorro, Joyce, and Philip survive? I guess we'll have to wait until the next chapter to find out. So we're going to go over some highs and lows, y'all. And we will start with it. We can start with Alan. I was going to say our guest. Technically, we've already gone through this. Since the script demands it, Alan, please go first with a high or a low.
I'm actually going to go with a high, and I'm just going to pick up on the implausibility of the hero winning fights and stuff, because I'm going to give a shout out to one guy that was not in the credit, but I think actually made this, and that's Shakima Knut, who was the stunt guy. And if you are a student of movies, you may know that again, because he went on to be the stunt guy for John Wayne and John Ford on movies such as Stagecoach. And he's the guy who developed the very famous stunt where you go underneath a moving stagecoach that they then ripped off in Raiders of the Lost Ark many years later. This serial, apparently...
It was an homage, Alan. It was an homage.
This serial, apparently, is where he started to develop a lot of his stunt skills. Was actually working on this first Zorro serial for Republic and then worked on all their other movie serials, doing all the stunt development work for. Clearly did not work on Batman. And actually, he's on screen in the Zorro outfit way more than John Carroll is, which is part of the reasons that the guy had the full Zorro has the full length mask is so you're not seeing the actor's face, because it's a stunt guy most of the time.
Who's doing the voice then?
John Carroll is.
Okay, so they're doing the voiceover.
Yeah. But most of the time you see Zorro, it's not actually John Carroll, it's Canute. I'll get into what I thought of it generally later, but I thought the stunt work was pretty damn good for 1937. And knowing what he developed later on, you can sort of see the seeds of that in it. So he was my big shout out. I had to go look it up when I was watching it as to who did the stunt work, and that's who it was. So.
Nice. We have a comment from Jared Albrecht, the Yardsville artist, that says, Alan stealing future fun facts. I haven't even gotten to that point in the script, so I haven't even looked at any of the fun facts yet. So,
well, Jared should be on the show, and then he could stop me. Yeah. Instead of swarming off to some convention.
It's not like we haven't had Alan on before and he would go into his facts like that.
Jared's at his booth right now frantically looking for new fun facts.
I will read the old fun facts and just reiterate what Alan said, but like I came across
here. Hey, that was my standout. Sorry.
Hey, I was super impressed. Like, I was like, I know there's a reason we have you on the show, you know, besides just being a good person. But yeah, like these fun facts that you drop on us are always wanted and needed. We will pass it off to Pat. Pat, what high or low or what do you have for the first round?
Well, you know, I wasn't really knowing what to expect with this one because we've done a different few other serials so far. And this one, I'm thinking it's kind of a slow burn on this one, right? It was moving a little bit slow in the beginning, and then we got into a little bit of action. And then we went into the second half, I guess, because this is a more of an extended episode. I like that song in the middle, you know, that they sang, the Zorro song. It was pretty fun.
Yeah, it made me think real quick, Pat, that I was like, should Pat bring out like a lute or something?
I was trying to figure out what I could bring like to do something, but maybe I'll get the guitar out next time and possibly stick out.
Do you have a mandolin?
No, I don't have a mandolin. I'm not even a mandolin myself. So, you know, I'm just a wuss. So I don't have one at all.
We'll help you out on that, Pat.
Yeah. Keep going. You know, if you want to, you can subscribe for just $1 a month to patreon.com/longboxcrusade. Help build my mandolin fund. We can get that. Maybe I can get a cool horse that we all can ride around the LBC.
You jump from a mandolin to a horse, Pat.
I'm dreaming big. And don't forget tacos.
You should.
Where's my painting? We got to get my painting done.
Tacos, painting. Focus, people. Focus. Pat, do you have anything else on that high or low?
I'll come back the next round.
Okay. I appreciate you doing that because, like, it even says in the script now. Like, did you see the script that Jared, you know, was, like, poking fun at you? You should go read that. While you read that, Jason, give us a high or low, please.
I thought that John Carroll did a really good job, you know, playing that kind of aloofness, that ineptitude, that, you know, that his alter ego demands. I got to tell you, like, at first when I saw it, I was like, is there somebody else that we don't know about that's actually Zorro? This guy, really? And just the way he played it was really cool. I liked it when he was riding the horse and fell off the horse, and they're like, well, we're never going to see that horse again. But the horse knew to go back to the lair, and then he's back up on the horse. And when he treated his the butler, his friend and butler, that way, like he was just a hired hand and was dissing him, I was like, oh, what a jerk. And then, you know, but then back at the cave, you see, okay, they duped me. It was well done, well performed.
Yeah, totally agree. And it was like, it was his uncle, right, who passed away at the end. Like, his uncle made like that comment, is like, no, you need to stick around and make sure that he gets some refreshments.
You're totally distant.
Like, we're going into battle. Should we wake him up? Like, nah.
But at the end, he's like,
wait for him.
And at the end, too, where it's like, okay, can I at least see who you are? And he lifted his mask, and you got to know his uncle's like, oh, hell no. Take me away now. Ain't no way.
That's why he died right away. He was like, oh.
He died from freaking shock of surprise. Like, no.
You totally wondering if he even saw it, you know? Like, there was like.
You have to assume he did it. Like, because my, probably like, even up in heaven, like, he's sitting there like, ain't no way. sitting there nudging Jesus like, no, no way. Anyway, I shouldn't be talking as much. Let's let Alan talk for round two.
Okay, I'm going negative on this one. I'll be honest, I did not like this at all. I have a thing about Westerns. I like my Westerns to be Westerns, not have cars, planes, and trains, and, you know, electricity and telephones. And I know there's a period when the West, you know, that sort of era of crossover, if you like, between the Wild West and sort of, you know, more 20th century living, you know, when people were on horseback and driving cars. But I don't know, if I'm going to watch a Western, I like a Western. And I know it's meant to be several generations on from the original Zorro, but I like my Zorro to be horseback and swords fighting and stuff like that. I don't necessarily, as much as I love multi-generational heroes, I don't know, I just, this one just didn't ring true for me. It was pretty dark as well. I mean, opening with, you know, the bad guys killing that 8-year-old kid seemed completely unnecessary. And with John Carroll, maybe aside, the acting was terrible. The line delivery was flat and monotonous and monotone by every single actor. And yeah, and the singing, having Zorro being a singing cowboy, just riding my horse along and singing my song. Yeah, that ain't Zorro. So to be honest, I think this is the worst iteration of Zorro I've ever watched. So you can guess I'm going to give this a 5 at the end of the day. And no sword. How can you do Zorro and him not have a sword?
Yeah, I was wondering that too. I'm like, where's
Sorry. The sword? So yeah, I got a big long list of negatives. I'll shut up now because that was my positive was the stunts, and then I have a big long list of negatives.
Well, I kind of had a question based off of that because when I was watching it, I just assumed this was like set in the West, like early 1900s.
But that car looked like 1930s. I mean, right, whether it was meant to be.
And then that plane looked like 1930s. It had to be like 1930s as well. Yeah. So I'm like, when is this taking
place? Yeah, but the trains were too old to be 1930s.
Right. The trains are old, but the cars and the planes are like, you know, current era. So
I will admit that, like, more than the car, like, the plane did surprise me. Like, it was like, dang, like, why weren't y'all just bombing trains and stuff to start with? Why bother with the cowboys? Just go with air support, man, if you got bombs and money to drop it. But it's interesting because, like, since I don't have as much experience with Zorro, then I didn't know that. Kathy, in the comments, said something, Alan, that you can comment on if you wish. He's like, I guess Alan and I would disagree on Zorro the Gay Blade.
Oh, I love Zorro the Gay Blade.
Zorro the Gay Blade is awesome.
Because they're playing it for fun and pastiche, and they're having a great time with it. It's a great movie.
Oh, okay. Like, hearing your perspective on it, it doesn't plus me or minus me on this one, Alan, because, like, I have, like, zip experience when it comes to Zorro, so... Like, it was okay with me, even though I'll admit the plane threw me off a little bit. But, like, everything else, I don't know.
Yeah, I just have it with Westerns in general. You know, if I sit down and want to watch what I believe to be a Western, I want it to be a Western. And I don't necessarily like it when you get more modern stuff in.
I mean, there should have been one shot of whiskey, right?
Yeah. You know?
We will pass it to Pat.
I'll shut up now.
No, you're good, Alan. Pat, go for it.
Are you passing the shot of whiskey to me or
later? We usually don't drink on.
Well, we're still working on our, getting our liquor license for our Dave and I's taco stand. So, we're growing. Little cantina we're going to have. It'll be fun. I was wondering the same thing with Alan. That was kind of one of my where's the sword in this one? I want some sword play on this one. There was some gunplay, and the gunplay was. It was all right. It just showed him standing there, boom, 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 boom. And that was about it, you know, and all those bad guys, they must go to stormtrooper school because they weren't hitting anybody. You got them surrounded and you're not hitting anybody. They drove a car in to, you know, and I figured the old man was going to die, but I thought maybe that Philip was going to die too, but.
I mean, the bad guys hit the uncle, so that's one kill.
Yeah, they did get. Yeah.
And hey, I'm so used to the good guys being the ones that are missing again. You know, I don't mind the bad guys being in F. Like, hey, you two love Star Wars. I don't know where you stand on Star Wars, Alan. Are you like you're a lover of Star Wars?
Yeah, I enjoy Star Wars. Yeah.
So like we got three lovers of Star Wars, and those stormtroopers still have yet to even singe one of them with like the heroes. So I'm used to the bad guys being in them, but not the good guys.
They took care of Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru, though.
Really quick, just a comment from the well-received Peanut Gallery. Jeff and Rick present says, okay, I remember watching this as a kid. I have a vivid memory from the third episode, but I really thought it was something different. I cannot figure out why Zara would be around on an elevator. So looks like a couple of people also just had a little bit of conflict with the modern technology. Is making me smile because this is 1937, yeah. Carrie, the one that was 87 years ago. So it's funny hearing, like, you know, us today talk about, like, we don't like the modern technology from something that was made in 1937. Jason, you're about to comment.
Number one, I'm going to jump on the bandwagon and say, how are you going to have a Zorro movie without a sword? That was something that I felt as well. And I suppose if it's going to be a period piece, I guess you could make that work. I mean, you could probably tell a good story current day and have Zorro return with today's technology and everything. But, I mean, you have to have certain key elements, and the sword is just one of them. You can't just abandon the sword. I guess I will say for a second high, though, I did like the secret passageway, and I was like, oh, goody, goody, when he opens that painting. So that tickled my tummy feathers. I'm a sucker for the secret passageway and the little secret location. And then when we saw Ray the horse in there and all the cool stuff, I was like, yeah, that's fun.
Another comment very quickly. Tony Pennington just said, as the son of man from Mexico, Zorro the Gay Blade was not well received by Jesus Montez. So we got some dissension about Zorro the Gay Blade. But he says, but the old man wouldn't shut up about Welsh-born Catherine Zeta-Jones and Zorro, one of the few DVDs he bought. I'm just going to hope that it was because of the cinematic quality of the movie. We can continue. But Pat, go ahead.
I do want to say, I kind of get what's happening here. We have to remember that it's called The Return of Zorro. So, obviously, as we know from the picture, there was a previous Zorro. Maybe he was more gunslinging and sword swashling, buckling a little bit more, and didn't have all the other, you know, future technology like the cars and all that. So, I can kind of get behind that a little bit, you know. I do like the Zorro with the sword and, you know, the guns. But, yeah, I kind of understand what they're doing here, bringing it more into an updated version of it. Like, you know, here's the next generation of Zorro, and how is he going to deal with this newer technology?
Yeah, this is just another one of those times, man. It makes me smile because, like, my absolute newness, my virginity on this is like paying off for me because I just watched it with absolute clear eyes. I had nothing jading me as far as like watching Antonio Banderas's Zorro or anything of that like fact. So like it's all new to me, but it's interesting hearing the other perspectives as well. I feel very similar to how I felt when I started watching the James Bond movies for the first time, because as I learned, people have very strong opinions about James Bond and the movies. So it follows that somebody that's even more legendary as far as like length of time that they've been around in Zorro would have even more of a passionate following of how that goes. So I like it. Before I go to fun facts, does anyone have any other comments that they want to make about the show?
I'm actually just going to pick up on what Jared said. Jason. What Jason said about a modern Zorro. Yeah, I could take a contemporary Zorro set in a contemporary modern environment. I think that would be cool, and I'm sure it's probably been done. I think my problem here is the mix. You know, if they'd have done a 1937 Zorro in Los Angeles dealing, you know, a bit like the Phantom movie was set in and around 1930s LA for a large proportion of it, and that worked. You know, they took him out of the jungle, put him in LA for a part of the movie. I think that worked. But here I think it was just it wasn't one thing or the other. So I think that was my thing. Plus the bad acting, the bad special effects there. You know, did you notice, by the way, in that first train sequence when they're chasing the bad guys are chasing the train. You can hear gunfire, but none of the guys on horseback are actually firing their guns.
Right. Yeah. I didn't notice that. Yeah.
Some of them, somebody had like a shotgun or something.
Yeah, but then he was using it as a club because I went back and watched it again just to make sure. Yeah. So I just had a lot of problems with it, of which the technology was a large part, but it wasn't the only thing. But I could see a contemporary Zorro working really well.
Gotcha. And we will move on to fun facts. Fact number one, John Carroll does all of his own singing in the serial. Good for John. And fact two, Carroll worked regularly in Hollywood until his service in World War II, where he was a pilot in North Africa, where he crashed and broke his back. But ever the warrior, he healed up and returned to acting until the 1970s. So John Carroll, even though he had a stunt double and everything going on, dude was tough, and he was a veteran. And
probably wished he had that stunt double in African World War II.
Probably. That sounds terrifying to crash a plane and break your hey, thank you to John Carroll for his service in WW2. And with that, we will move on to the whip snap ratings. 5 means that you loved it. 4 means it was very good. 3 means it was good. 2, just okay. And 1, you did not like it. Staring at Alan. You know what? We're going to do that compliment sandwich that I found so much about in the military. For those who weren't in the military, compliment sandwich, a lot of times if you're giving someone feedback, you're like, hey, you did a really great job. And then you say something like, yeah, you know, there was that time that, you know, you took the gun muzzle and you put it against the hostage's head. That wasn't really good. But, and then finish it by saying, you know, everyone got out alive. So that's a good thing. You know, that's the sandwich. And based off of what I'm hearing, you know, I'm saving Alan for the middle of that sandwich. I'm going to go with Jason first. Jason's going to start us off with a rating.
I think I'm a little more forgiving than Alan. I'm going to start it right in the middle with a 3. And I'm going to say it was good. It was good because it had a lot of the elements that, in my mind, make a good Zorro story. That acting was a little flat in some places, like Alan pointed out. But, I mean, John Carroll did a really good job of convincing me that he was just, like, totally useless. And Zorro might be an entirely different person. So I'm going to make some allowances there. Miss the sword like we talked about, but I am interested to see how the story progresses. So let's just start with a 3 and we'll go from there.
We have a 3, and let's see. Surely, Alan, surely you're going to match. No, I'm kidding. Give it whatever rating that you need, sir. You're up.
I'm actually just going to come down one score. I'm going to give it a 2. I could have given it a 1, but I'm going to give it a 2 for the stunt work, John Carroll. And one thing I did like, I don't know if you guys noticed in the opening credits where they actually told you who all the actors were in Zorro. They did not give Zorro just got his own credit as Zorro.
Yeah.
Which I thought
Yes.
Which I thought was pretty cool. So those 3 reasons bumped me up to a 2.
Yeah, because you're just saying there are some things that you like. Like maybe like the crux of it you weren't a big fan of, but there were things that you
It had a few high points, yeah.
Awesome. Pat.
Well, I kind of feel a little bit like Alan. There were some things that it was missing, and I kind of feel this way because, you know, we're just loving Robin Hood right now. Man, Robin Hood is great. Batman, it was all right, but I was there for the fun stuff of it. And watching this Zorro one, I couldn't find a lot of fun stuff in this one, but maybe it might be, and it might get down the road. So I'm willing to just give it to even right now at a 3, that it was good. I'm hoping for some sword action. There better be some sword action pretty soon. Otherwise, my score may get a little bit lower at this time. I'm looking for a little bit more out of this one. I guess I am tainted by Robin Hood right now.
So I guess I'm the positive guy. I'm not used to doing that like so often. So, you know, I'm going to peacock around a little bit. You know, I'll give it a 4. Like, I thought it was fine, but again, I'm coming in with absolutely clear eyes. I had no expectation as to what or who Zorro was, you know, other than, you know, the black suited hero. And I didn't know about the rapier, yes, and everything. So But that's okay. Like, I don't know whether swordplay is going to come into the fore for the next 11 or not. And it seems like with 12 episodes, they're going to get pretty much in and out of the action for the most part. I hope to see it because I like that there was a decent amount of action. I like that there was an unassuming hero that turned out to be a pretty good ass kicker. I always like my heroes to do that. And I like that. Like, I mean, he said to his uncle, like, you will be avenged. And they immediately show a montage of him going after all the men. Like, yeah, like, and I meant it. Like, I am going to put you guys in the ground for what you did to my uncle. So I liked it. And so I'll set a relatively high bar at a 4, and we'll see where it goes from there. Maybe it goes down to 3 and 2 level. Maybe it goes up to 5. I'm not sure yet. And also, we have to find like a Zorro version of the Bold Outlaw. So somebody can fill us in on all of Zorro knowledge, because I'd love to know some more of that inside baseball.
And the Bold Fox. Series.
Yeah, like there has to be one, right? There has to be. There's somebody that's going to listen to this and be like, oh my God, they're covering Zorro. Yes, I'm all my dreams. There has to be. Pat, were you going to say something real quick before I went on in the script?
I was just going to say, I'm surprised, Delvin, that you are actually at a 4. Usually, you know, it's the typical Delvin where I'm going to start the bar low when there's going to be something high. So I like that. Maybe I like that you can be. No.
Maybe I was just happy that, like, Zorro won some fights. And I'm like, ooh, heroes can do that? I'm used to Batman. I'm hurt, Pat. I have PTSD.
He not only won some fights, like with the with El Lobo, he did like a DDT off the rope, off the top rope.
When he just
off the
red eagle. He just bounced. He's like a spider monkey. Like, I loved it. Like, so yeah, I appreciate his willingness to get into the mix and win some fights. Okay. So yeah. But that's okay. We got a couple of people guarded, and Alan, like, only slightly jaded as far as what he wants to see for Zorro. So I'm looking forward to seeing what episode 2 brings and what we all can expect. With that, we are thrilled to kick off these comments with special shout outs to our Crusaders Club members. These are the fine folks that have joined our crusade. They enjoy early access to special unbox episodes, voting on show content, free raffle entries, and so much more. These are the folks reaping the benefits and giving some much appreciated support to the show.
Alan Wright.
And Helica Wolf.
Auburn Elvis.
Bill Bear.
Braxton Underwood.
Captain Entropy.
Clark Westfield.
Clinton Robinson.
Dave Collins.
Gary V.
Gerald Green.
Jason Keane.
Jason Lady.
Jeremy L.
Jim Jarman. Had a birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, Jimbo.
Jameel.
Joe Thomas.
John Watson.
Josh Strickland.
Candace Ward.
Kathy Bright, MVP.
Mark Ross.
Matt and Lissy Paso.
Maxwell Traver.
Miranda W.
P.D. Devins.
Paul Hicks.
Rick from Jeff and Rick Present in the chat today. Thanks for joining us.
Rob Morgan.
Samantha Maney.
Sean Urbanski.
Spidey67.
Spreadsheet.
Steve Cronin.
Tim Price.
Tony Pennington.
Toronto Cop.
If we missed anyone on our list, we apologize. Please keep in mind that we record these episodes well in advance of release. So if you're a recent addition, we should be adding you soon, like maybe one of the 60 some odd people. Like, if all of you guys join like the Crusaders Club, like right now, like, well, that'd be awesome. I don't give out the prizes. I only give Jared crap when he...
I could get a mandolin then.
You could get a mandolin. Pat would play a mandolin for you live on the next episode if literally everyone who's watching right now signed up. And it's only $1 a month. Oh, I'm not there yet in the script. Sorry. But still, no worries. Just let us know that we miss you by sending an email to contact@longboxcrusade.com and we will get it straightened out. You might be asking yourself, how do I become a Crusaders Club member? I hope you are, because I have an answer for you. Head over to patreon.com, search for Longbox Crusade. For as little as $1 a month, you get access to the amazing world of the Crusaders Club. Come check it out. If you don't have any money lying around, but you still want to help us out here at Longbox Crusade headquarters, please take a moment to write a review on iTunes for this podcast. Even if you just want to keep it short with just our ratings, it helps raise the profile of the show. We will share your review on the next show. If you're watching it on YouTube, we would love a like a follow would be absolutely amazing too. We would love to have more followers so you can get access to our content like this. We usually release stuff about twice a month. We're going to talk about some shares and retweets from the final two episodes of Batman, which were The Executioner Strikes and The Doom of the Rising Sun.
We had Nathaniel, Devin, Sanford, Mason,
Courtney Holland,
James Bond Lexicon,
Alan J. Porter,
Coffee and Comics.
Snuck in twice there, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. Yep.
And you know who else snuck in twice? Clint Robinson, because of Fan Film Fridays podcast.
I was going to say, yeah. Got Coffee and Comics and Fan Film Fridays podcast.
And we had three comments. So, Pat, if you wanted to read one, and we'll take care of the other two eventually.
I'll go ahead and start us off with Will Collier. And he says, my grandparents had one reel of the serial on 8mm. Wow, that's really cool. Wow.
That is cool.
Just a side note, I remember watching some old cartoon stuff, black and white cartoons. My dad had on his 8mm reel, too, that I grew up watching. So it was really cool to have that. And it was The Living Corpse is what they had. And I bet we watched it about 50 times when I was a kid. And so did I. I was so good at, you know, putting it through the reel and all that. Oh, man, that takes me back now.
I remember watching the film 8mm. It was weird. Anyway, Jason, your comment.
It was weird. Yeah. We got one from Bill Beer who said, loving this. These are so fun.
Thank you for that, Bill. And I have one from, it looks like Lloyd Klein, and he says, you know, heart emoji, love, like this 1943 Batman was his favorite Batman movie, because I think at one of the fun facts, Jared mentioned that they did kind of kludge them all together into one movie that you could just watch all the way through. And they, you know, cut out some of the things just to make it a little bit neater and ran through. So I bet that was a pretty cool thing to watch from the 1940s. And just as a quick reminder, everyone, you can call us now and leave us a voicemail if you like. That phone number is 707-532-5269 or 707-532-LBOX.
Pick up the phone.
Thank you, Jason.
Well, that's it for this episode of Saturday Matinee Theater. If you'd like to hear more from us in the realm of comic books, action films, and more, you can check out the Long Box Crusade. Pat, where can they find that?
Well, Jason, I am glad you asked. You can find us on Spotify, Amazon, Audible, pretty much all those podcasters out there. Just go out there and look for the Long Box Crusade. We're also on YouTube, or we're at www.longboxcrusade.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and at YouTube, all at Long Box Crusade. So go and check us out. Like us, subscribe us, hit us up wherever, and do it all.
Well, thank you, Pat. And if you want to hear us on our trek through all things James Bond, check out on our Majesty's Secret podcast. Jason, where can they find that? Well, thank you, Jason. You can find that on Apple Podcasts, Podbean, and most podcatchers. We're also at www.secretpodcast.podbean.com. You can find us on Twitter/X at OHMSPod. If you'd like to chat with us online, we can be found at, Pat, go ahead and kick us off.
Well, Jason, I'm glad you asked. You can find me at Christatos01 on the Twitter. Delvin, where can you be found?
I can be found on Twitter X, DEE_RAY1977. I can be found on Instagram at Delvin Ray. Alan, thank you for once again guest appearing. We're just going to just eliminate that guest. Yes. let everyone know where you can be found, please.
If you go to my website, alanjporter.com, and click on the links page, you can find links to all the places I hang out on the web. And if you want to keep up with the stuff I'm doing in terms of pop culture, writing, and other stuff, including my little essay on my history of Zorro, you can get a free subscription to my weekly newsletter at alanjporter.substack.com.
Thank you, Alan. And you can find me at Jason Albrick on Instagram and Threads. Well, now it's time to get your quivers filled with arrows and get ready to fight against taxation, because our next episode, we will continue our journey through the 1955 Adventures of Robin Hood TV series. We'll see you next episode for Episode 8, Queen Eleanor. The meetup location, Sherwood Forest.
remember to replace the speaker on the post when you leave the theater.